Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today in the studio, I'm most fortunate to have a New York-based photojournalist who is the founder and editor of an incredibly interesting travel and lifestyle publication online called Bear Leader Chronicle. That's B-E-A-R-L-E-A-D-E-R Chronicle. It's a travel and lifestyle publication online, and it was founded and it is edited by Daniela Stallinger. Daniela is here in the studio today. Hi, Daniela. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me.
We are going to talk about your impressions of the north coast of Oregon here. You've been in the Columbia Pacific region for the last few days with your husband, taking photographs and writing stories for your publication. And we'll be interested to know your perspective because you've never been here before. However, before we start talking about that and Bear Leader Chronicle, please tell the listening audience about your background.
Well, I was born in Austria. And when I was 3 weeks old, my mother moved with me to West Berlin, where my dad started working as a hotel director. So that was in 65. I gave you my age now. And it was an interesting time in West Berlin, between 65 and 75. It was the time when Americans were very present. So I went to the American school, which was close to our house. It was just started, basically, very early by Sergeant Shriver, with a great idea of having kids, German kids, together with American kids, and have a curriculum half day in German and half day in English. So I was introduced to the American way of thinking very early on. And then, because of, as you're all aware, the historical, what happened with it being Russian and, you know, very close in Eastern Germany, my mother felt she couldn't live like on this island anymore, so she moved us back in 75, and my dad then commuted back and forth between Austria and Berlin. And but coming back to Austria wasn't an easy transition for me, so my grandmother decided that it's better for me to move to finish my schooling in England. So I always stuck to the Anglo-Saxon, and I feel really at home in that part of the world. And and then I became a photographer and moved to Vienna, went to university, and but decided really quickly that actually somebody in New York saw my work and said, why don't you move to New York? And I thought about it, and I really contemplated moving to Paris, and then I thought, well, I give this a go for 6 months. Well, that was 25 years ago. That happens to a lot of people in New York. And so I had a very successful career as a for-hire commercial photographer doing portraits for magazines and advertising, and I still do. And but because I'm older now and the media world has changed, I felt I wanted to do something at that stage of my life where I can contribute more to the content. And in the classical venues, that's not really possible because they have a structure in place and you come for hire and you can't really be in charge or really, like I said, contribute to the content that's go out there. So, but with the media it is now and with online, it was very financially possible to basically go out and start the site and use a template and create it and just go out what I learned, how to do stories and basically organize them, figure out where we go, how you meet it. So that's really my background. So that's easy for me. It's just a little bit because it's my own. And we started 18 months ago. And
you're doing this, I want to mention, because your husband, Mark, is an architect. He is from Australia.
He's from Australia.
And he works with you.
He works with me. And then there is we have these partners in Sweden that created the whole brand. We met half of the team in Sweden used to live in New York. So we have this team in Sweden and Stockholm that really is responsible for the whole look of it. And then we have a copy editor, and then we have a few contributors that are starting to come on board. It's really people that have like-minded ideas. And so we sort of went out the door 18 months ago, and we are out every month, and with our newsletter that goes to 11,000 subscribers now, and we are doing as much as we can, so we send more stories out every month. And it's growing. It's growing actually quite fast. So we are, it's a great experience. It's really amazing how people react. I didn't expect that because I thought it would sort of take its time.
What made you decide that, because I think you told me before that people were asking you because you travel so much, where should I go? What's the best place, the best restaurant for this or where, what should I see? Where should I go? What should I do when I go to these places? There are many, many guidebooks. Some of them, of course, are dated. Obviously, things have gone online now. But because of your unique perspective, your background as a sophisticated traveler, a lot of people started to ask you. And that's when you thought, well, wait, maybe I can create this online travel and lifestyle publication that would help people figure out, okay, I have gone here, I have researched this, and based on my taste, which must be similar to the people who are following you, here are my recommendations.
Right. And I think what I saw is, ever since I'm in New York, people would come to me and say, my mother and I are going to Paris. My mother had a hip operation. She used to be traveling all over the world. She was really active. I don't want her to feel in any way that she can't do it anymore. What should I do? So I would find little things where we could really work around the issue. And for example, we did the story about a French company in Paris that drives you around in a Citroën DGVE car. And it was perfect for her. She had the best time. And their teenage daughter was there, her with my friend. So it was just the perfect mix. This is just one example of little things where I feel I can come in and I can give people a little bit of an idea of something new that they might not have thought about.
And customize the experience.
Customize
experiences.
And it's not, we're not really for the latest and hippest and luxury. We sometimes like hotels that are around for 20 years. I mean, and I think that's very valid. Somebody must do a great job if a hotel is successful for 20 years. And so that's really what we're trying to do, is connect the dots for people. And I think what I realized, that sometimes I'm much more of a cultural translator, because having been born in Europe and then having lived amongst Americans for so long, I can really experience why people want a different, they need a different way how they can go to Europe. The time's shorter. Europeans have 5 weeks paid vacation. Americans, if they're lucky, have two weeks. So when you're going to Paris for 5 days, you really want to see something. So it's a fine line between packing your day too full, seeing a lot, but also experiencing it on a leisurely, slower pace. So that's always a sort of a little bit of a
yes, it's this idea of, do you go deeper in a smaller way? I mean, not smaller, but you go deep and you just focus on a few things, or do you try to hit everything and do everything, which can sometimes be frantic, and then you're not sure you even are really processing the experiences when you travel.
Yeah, so that's where we're trying to place ourselves, and where we would love to be a tool for you to go someplace. But everything we do is really also for the people who cannot travel. May it be because of time, constraints in their lives, or financial. So I that was really important for me. Every story that you read has enough human interest to keep you engaged. You might read The New Yorker, or you might read National Geographic, but you might read us too for that same matter. And that's really what I like.
Yes, you've said something really important, because the reason people aren't just sitting in their rocking chairs reading guidebooks is because it's, go here, do this, boring. Yes, you can maybe say, oh, these are some highlights, but we're right. And that's why, while you have been here in Astoria, you've been interviewing a lot of local people and getting local color and flavor. I want to also, though, step back, because the name of your publication, Bear Leader, one word, BEARLEADER Chronicle, is so unique and interesting, and a lot of our listening audience will not know the story. They can find the story online, but for those people who may not be able to look at it online right now, why don't you explain how you chose the name Bear Leader Chronicle for your publication?
Well, the term Bear Leader was literally a man, usually of Russian or Caucasian descent, that had a bear and went in the 14th and all the way up to between the 12th and 14th century, from village to village with a bear to entertain the village. He taught the bear tricks and he led the bear. So this job description or this then ceased to exist, but the British basically relaunched this term when the British started to travel in their like grand tour around the time of Queen Victoria. And usually it was young aristocrats because they had the money to really go to Italy or France or Spain. But because there was only Baedeker really around, like the first guidebook, it was much more treacherous. So in order to be secure, they would get a chaperone, which was usually somebody quite burly and big, and they would chaperone these young, often maybe not too smart, aristocrats around Italy. And so there are actually illustrations, depictions, or caricatures actually in newspaper articles of that time, where they have big noses with warts and like crazy hair and they're being made fun of. And whoever read Brideshead Revisited will remember when Sebastian is going to Venice the first time, Lady Marchmont gives him a bear leader, which was this strange character, this opera singer. So if you ever read it again, that's where the term also is being mentioned. And so
bear leader is a guide to keep you safe, yes, and chaperone you on
exactly.
your trip.
Yes.
Well, that's a very interesting use, and that's unique in that way. Thank you for educating all of us about what a bear leader is. So, Bear Leader Chronicle has been around for about 18 months. What stories, where have you traveled in those last 18 months, and what kinds of places have you featured?
Well, we've been everywhere from Wales to Greece, Amsterdam, Austria, lots in England, the northeast coast, Italy, and Munich, Nuremberg, all the way to Bratislava.
And so, what about, and so you've focused a lot on Europe, but what now are you, but what about the United States? How's that?
Yes, the United States, we did a lot the northeast, and then we went all the way up to New Hampshire, Maine, and now we came in December to the northwest. We based ourselves in Seattle and really started traveling from Seattle, now here, then we go to California, and then we go back up via Oregon back to Seattle. And then in the spring and summer, we will go back to Europe with one trip actually up to Newfoundland. And then, we will be in Europe again for 2 months. Probably.
How do you choose where you want to focus? Like, how did you figure Astoria, Oregon? Okay, you said, you and your husband, Mark, whose family actually moved from Australia to Seattle, and mm-hmm. they live there now. So you said, okay, we'll go to Seattle, and then we're going to do the Pacific Northwest. For our audience, and but there are many ways you could do it. So you said, we're going to focus on these points. So how did you choose what you were going to do from Seattle? Northwest places?
There's a few things that I was always curious about, and in many ways, because in one way in Seattle, the Japanese influence and the history of Japanese and how it influenced the landscaping, the architecture, and there was very little talked about. So I was curious about that. There's one story that I'm that I started already. I shot certain things. I met people who know about the history and all these nurseries that are run by Japanese immigrants. And then also what happened in World War II, the internment camps, and then it being away. And now it has sort of a comeback. And I'm meeting an amazing chef, actually, when we return, young chef who has started a restaurant and who's bringing this very specific Japanese cuisine back. And so I'm really interested. Most of the things we do, I think, are historically based. So what intrigued me coming to Astoria was A, this unusual name. I mean, there's the Astoria in Queens, which I'm very familiar with, and where we go and have great Indian food, because there's Little India in Astoria, Queens. And then him just coming out here and this entrepreneurial endeavor to start this here, and all these layers. And so I was curious, and I did a lot of research, and there are several big historical events that really shaped the city. And then it's amazing geographical site, this river, this enormous force of water. And so I think it's an interesting juxtaposition to, you know, then going to Santa Cruz or Ojai, which is a completely different history. So we really like to explore things that way.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today in the studio, I am interviewing Daniela Stallinger. Daniela is the founder and editor of Bear Leader Chronicle. That's B-E-A-R-L-E-A-D-E-R, Bear Leader Chronicle, which is an online travel and lifestyle publication with a lot of stories about places that maybe you will or maybe you won't visit, but you might want to learn about anyway. And Daniela and her husband, Mark, have been here in Astoria, Oregon for the last several days, almost a week actually, really diving into the history. I know you've been to the Columbia River Maritime Museum and the Historical Society. You met with Mac Burns. And have people told you, by the way, about the Chinese heritage here in the Garden of Surging Waves?
That was a fascinating thing for me, because in the Maritime Museum, which is, by the way, a fabulous museum, I saw this where they had this little blip where they said how efficient Chinese workers were and how they developed a system how they canned the fish. It's very hard to find these kinds of stories online. I mean, there's just even, you know, it's very hard to come by. So sometimes I would just say what we do as Bear Leader, we take these bits and we repackage what's already there. It's not that we reinvent the wheel. It's just I see this and then I say, wow, why is that? And then that there was a Chinatown until a certain period. And then everybody sort of went back, which is what I have to figure out more, how's historical what happened to this community. But so there's many, many layers, and I think bringing it back to Astoria, because it's something what everybody's interested into, is because of one movie, when you type in Astoria, it sort of shapes the story of Astoria in the last 20 years, just online. And I think it doesn't do it justice enough. I mean, it's great, but I think there's many more layers to it, which sort of fall by the wayside if you really see this one part of it.
Yes, we might mention what that is. We know it is
the Goonies.
I know, and that's true. It is when there was the 20th year celebration, there were people from Japan from all over the world here. And however, I love your perspective on that. It is, Astoria is so much more than this film, which obviously is a cult film. What I'm curious about, though, is because you did a lot of research and then you said, okay, we're going to go here. So you had some background, you had some knowledge and information, which I always think is a great idea before you're going on a trip. Learn as much as you can. However, it's not the same as being there and experiencing it.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing when people say, oh, I want a virtual tour, or I want to see exactly what my hotel room is going to look like. What about the element of surprise? So how does that work? I mean, how do you know how much to tell people or how not too much? And you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I think also one thing which we try to do at Bear Leader is we manage expectations. Instead of really hyping something up or really disparage something, what we say is like, look, if you go there, this is what's going to happen, and you might like it, just be prepared with this. And then you take it to a level where you manage the expectation of what you might find. For example, I actually think it's great to come to Astoria in the winter. I mean, because it's a complete, I have to say this, and you know, don't taste it, but it has a lot. It reminds me of Venice in the winter, and people without the carnival, but the way the site is, the fog, the way the locals have a stake in it, you know, it's sort of this time where they recharge the batteries for the very busy summer to come. Because if you're going to Venice in August and then you come back in January, you don't recognize the place. I mean, it's completely, it's two different worlds. And I always say to people, like, if it's possible, go January, February. Yes, it might not be hot, and yes, it might be flooded with water, acqua alto, as they call it, and you have to walk on the planks, but that alone is an amazing experience. And I would say it's amazing to have this heavy rain, like yesterday, all day. It's a really great experience, because it's not really that cold. It's not like, as we are approaching the blizzard in the Northeast, as we're having this interview. And so I think that's something which, because I'm not obeying to some focus groups or anything, I can basically decide. I say, I really think, subjectively, that's what I would do. It's off-season. Everybody is, yeah, like I said, they're getting ready for the springtime. And people actually have time. And you come before the cruise ships come.
That is a great perspective, Danielle. It really is. And how have you found the locals to be? Because, again, I think a lot of travel writers come in and they just go to attractions and they get little sound bites. However, you're really talking to people about what it's like to live here and what their stories are. You're getting those stories.
What was fascinating to me is because in really talking to people that have been born and raised here and people that moved here, was the people that moved here between 10, 20, 5 years, 2 years, they all said the same thing. They knew driving over the bridge that it was the place they wanted to be. And I found that fascinating because, and I have not quite figured out what really happened, but there must be something in the landscape, or again, how the water and these two water forces come together, that really captures people's ideas, like, ooh, I want to be part of this. I mean, this is really the underlying thing, because it was always backwards. People said, I liked it here, and then I had to figure out, what could I do here to make a living? And that's, I think, a big difference. And I can say this from my own experience. When I decided to move to New York, you don't move to New York because the landscape captures your imagination. It's just not going to happen. You really go to New York because you want to be part of this creativity and you.
There's an energy. There's a vibration.
Energy,
yes,
it's about your work or your profession that you're going to create, and that might be for London or LA. So when you go to places like this, it's the place that really triggers your imagination, and then people figure out what they do afterwards in order to make it work.
Yes.
And that, I think, shapes the spirit of a city. And I think that's always, historically now, having been, you can go to the Flavel House of...
Yes, Flavel House.
Yep. Flavel House, he came here, he liked it, and then he figured out what he would do. I mean, he was a captain, but then everything happened because he wanted to be here. And you can take the guys who have Fritz and Scoop, that was the same nowadays. They came from Seattle, they came over the bridge and said, oh, I like it here. What can we do to make a living here and be able to live here? So I think it has a long history, this idea. And I think that's really what I find is the most interesting thing about Astoria. And that's the red thread in the town from its beginning, I think.
That's really an astute observation. How is it different traveling in the United States versus traveling in Europe for you? I know we've talked a lot about, I mean, in America, it seems there's still this idea that anything is possible. Americans are pragmatists. You know, we can reinvent our lives, whereas Europe seems more unchanging. So how is that for you?
Well, it's two things. One, it's really the enormous scale. And I think what America has is space between people still, except the the urban centers. So it gives people room to be, and everybody comes from another place, so they left parts of it behind. And I think it makes it easier. You have less baggage. Where Europe has a long history, it's very dense. If you think about it, there's many people on a relatively small scale. And so in order for them to live, they have to basically get along in a different way. They have, their rules are stricter in order to make society work in a different way. That would be, I mean, anecdotal, but I think observation, but it might be onto something there. I think that's the biggest difference.
We have just a few minutes left, and what are some other thoughts you'd like to leave a listening audience with about travel in general, and just whatever perspective you'd like to offer?
My big thing is what I try to do for Barely. I always say we are the slow travel to version to slow food, is do not feel embarrassed or weird about being a tourist. I think be really, you know, out there and say, well, it's great. It's my first time going to San Francisco. It's my first time going to Paris. It's my first time going to Athens. And be open about it and say, be curious, because it gives you the freedom to ask questions instead of sort of hiding behind trying to blend in. You don't have to blend in. I mean, in a way, the world is flat as we see now. Everybody knows much more. People are much more curious, I find, than if you traveled 30 years ago. And that's really a good thing. I think that's one thing the internet gave us. It gave us that people know more once you go to a place about your life. Sometimes it's cliches that they know, but it's much, much more, people are more curious about one another, I think. And I think traveling now is makes that easier for everybody. So really go there and experience it. And yeah, don't feel strange when you say, oh, I'm a tourist. I think it's actually a great thing. I always say, I'm a tourist. I'm very open about it.
Well, and we're all tourists on planet Earth, period.
Yes.
I mean, that's,
and
if you go to the larger piece, in our lives, we are tourists. And you can define tourists in many different ways. But the way you're defining it really is to have an open mind, to look at things perhaps in a different way than we ever have, and to be willing to step out there and say, well, why is that happening? Or what,
yes,
you know, so
and
to
I
be unafraid.
Ask the questions. And most of the time, and that's the one thing I give you also away, is you will find that most things that seem strange to you are back to one historical moment in time. Most of things that we've experienced in a place or that we come across really can be pinpointed to one or two events back in history. But if you ask locals, you will come to this point.
Daniela, I have so enjoyed visiting with you today. This is, you have just a great perspective on all things travel and life. And life and travel are connected because, as you know, we know that travel opens our minds, helps promote understanding between peoples. Obviously, we have our sister city, Waldorf, Germany, and that it's very important for us to build bridges. It is, we live in a small, you know, global world these days. So thank you so much for talking to us
today.
Thank
you, Donna, for having me.
And again, my guest has been Daniela Stallinger. She is the founder and editor of Bear Leader Chronicle, which is online. It's Bearleader Chronicle. It's a really fascinating and interesting online travel and lifestyle publication. Really fun to read whether you're planning a trip somewhere or not. And it'll be very exciting to see what she writes about her visit and her time here in Astoria. So thank you again, Daniela. And you can go to the website, which is bearleader.chronicle.com. I want to thank Kate Brister for being the engineer today, and my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. It's healthy. It's good for your body. It's good for relaxing and for being in the moment, which is really all we have, the present moment. Focus on the things that are going well in your life. There will always be those things that aren't going well. Focus on the things that are with gratitude, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for being here now on the amazing planet we call Earth.